Hello?
Oh, yes, hello. Am I speaking too early?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Now I can.
Yeah, am I speaking too early?
Hold on.
Hello?
What can I do for you?
Yeah, this is David Parker calling you from Normbook Writing. How are you doing?
You call me from where?
Normbook Writing.
Normbook Writing. Okay.
So I'm calling you on behalf of Sheldon. I'm the senior strategist over here. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You?
That's perfect. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for asking. So Sheldon's on leave right now, so currently I'm going to be the one who's taking care of your project. So
okay.
Can you please tell me, do you get the time to check your email or the portal? The Sheldon has sent you the brief form over there?
Yes, but I'm not sure if I'm doing it right. I may be mucking it up. I'm not very good with that kind of technical stuff. I wrote a lot of stuff down, but I'm not even sure if you've received it.
All right, so you got the form, right?
The one that asked you the outlines and the information?
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Yes. So by any chance you got the time to fill out the form, or are you having any difficulties?
Towards the end, I'm having a little trouble with the plot line and defining it clearly. I got a rough idea, but I'm not sure about it. It's like the guy is having different experiences that are related to what he's receiving that information through his life, and he wants to deny it, and he doesn't want to admit that that's who he is, and that sort of thing. But it's all like, I don't want to be a kind of freak kind of guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So those are people that are crazy and that sort of thing, you know. People are going to say I got some kind of mental problem.
Okay.
Along that line. It reoccurs over and over through his life, through his odd experiences. Yeah.
All right. So if you're having trouble filling out the form, I can just fill it from my end. I'm just going to ask the questions from you. Will this be okay?
That's fine.
All right. So I'm really curious about the book. So can you please tell me, what is it about?
I got the idea that guy was starting to realize that he's a little different, and he says to his friend that he's psychic, and his friend asks him to prove it. So he reaches up with his mind up into the sky, and to his surprise, he starts to get these images of another world. World around a world. It's early for me. I slept in. It's a world with two suns and one planet. And then the entity started describing the planets and who he was and how his society operated and things like that. And it goes on to be very descriptive of this world. And like the people who are, not people, they're more like starfish. But they're, that's just a vague similarity that he could relate to them. Because the thing he had in his own world.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like multiple brains around their starfish limbs and one central brain, and he describes how these multiple brains were like sub-brains, like, and they performed different functions, and he told about how the society was structured, and like their currency is like information.
All right.
And they reach out to find new information, like for a new currency, and that was their attempt. That's what they why they were trying to contact other people like they would contacting him. But the fact that he reached up into his mind, he gave them permission to contact him by doing that. And he described how the world is mostly just a vast, giant, shallow sea. And it's really just the whole planet is like a solid iron core. It's mostly made of metal, and the sea is very light, and these creatures build cities out of living material, like the planet. The sea life in the ocean is mostly like, well, I guess you can compare them to like a giant lily pad, but on an industrial scale, you know. That how they would feed, and you know, like they had a kind of plankton, and they ate that, but they could also eat the edges of the planktons before they hardened, and they reshaped the planktons genetically to build their cities, and they didn't reach into the sky. They were like vast giant bubbles floating in the ocean, but living, you know, based on the plant life. And I described how they reproduce. They had, what's the word, not plankton. They come out you know how a fish egg would come out, and then it would be a very small animal existing with the plankton and gradually grow. And then eventually they would go to a size where they would be chemically drawn back to their cities by like the same way a fish would be drawn back up a river. But they didn't really have rivers. And they had cities that were scattered out, but they also had what they would call a dry city. Only dry from our perspective, from their perspective, not from ours. They built, and all their machinery was organically based, and they could made machines that lived like a living pipe. Each section would have like huge leaves on each side of it, and they would be linked together, and they would transport the water from the ocean into the dry cities. And they had smaller ones that would just transported fluids and liquids, and larger ones that transported the actual starfish people. I gave a comparison. The larger ones were like the whole like a certain like one of our elevators, except it would be like a column of water rising into the city. They did not have giant mountains, but they had originally were like calderas of super volcanoes. That's the best I can compare it to ours. But they didn't have lava as we know it. They had, it was mostly metal. And the calderas were like giant mountains of metal, but they were more like calderas that, like Yellowstone is, you know, the great big old. And they built their cities in there. They pumped the water up and they flooded them, and they grew their cities in those as well. And that's how they learned to spread out over the land. they kind of floated in the calderas, but they were also partially attached to the calderas, the floors of the calderas to stabilize them. And they were there in the first place to do things like dry research that we would consider dry. To them, for them, it would be a dry city, but for us, it would still be pretty wet. And they developed technologies that allowed them to extend their intellect by creating these chips that they didn't have what we would consider a computer, but they built them into these like arches, graceful arches that curve over and around about 20, 30 feet up into the air. And they attach to another arch, and they come down in pattern of four to each one. But each section in the arch was a rigid metal-like transistor chip, but it was like a foot by 10 feet or 5 feet, something like that. But the chips themselves were actually encased in a living genetically engineered creature that was part plant and part of their life. They used their own, not children, but they changed the genetic structure so they could they inserted these chips all along to what we would consider spine, but they don't have spine. They just had a rigid exterior skeleton. And each one of those had a leaf coming out from each side to generate energy for it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, on this arch, all these arches' leaves would come together and join. And there would be like a semi-translucent dome, I guess, or a series of domes that connected together. And at the base of each dome, they could on their physical form, they had a nerve that could come out, a semi-flexible, like an appendage, but like a... more like a wire shape, but they could move it around and insert it into slots on the base of the columns to retrieve the information. And they did this on an industrial scale. These structures were huge and spread out. And each base of each column, three of the starfish people could extend one of those flexible limbs into the column and exchange information. But every column and every part of the arch was connected to all the other arches. It was like a vast green computer. And it allowed them to store vast amounts of information about their world and, you know, their own technology, and even their own social information. But also, they could do it all at once. It was like a combination church and bank to them.
Mm-hmm.
It served kind of a social function in both those ways. And they could do it in huge quantities, all of them together, and they would generate a processing power that was comparable to like 1,000 supercomputers. So they could probably pretty much solve any of their problems that way. And I was speaking to a particular individual who had a latent telepathic ability.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the ways they reached out to gather new information and contact other places. other worlds and that sort of thing. And the cities were organized where each of the buildings had a place where one of these starfish people could act as a central brain and control the flow of liquids and fluids and elevators and send life to each individual section of the city, you know, to nourishment and control the floating elevators. That's what, and to communicate, actually could communicate with the building itself. It was actually had a special location where it would be attached to the building.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the building's engineer would be today. And also described something about their, they had a kind of space program. They did not use rockets or anything like that. They used what you would think of as giant balloons. But these balloons weren't like a rubber or anything. They were actually made from the living plants and biology of their own combined. And they would fully inflate these. They would be self-inflating because the plant itself would be growing to generate a gas that slowly filled it. And it allowed it to gradually get bigger and bigger. I don't know. I can't determine the exact rate. But they would, until it became, started to float up into the air. Also, the world had a thicker atmosphere, so it was allowed them to get higher up into the atmosphere with a this huge balloon structure. And they were on a scale of like, you know, an entire city, except just one giant living balloon
mm-hmm.
that could go up into the air. And they had a form of photosynthesis that allowed them to nourish themselves in a central resource core, you know, that sort of thing. Furthermore, they had the ability, the living spaceships had the ability to interface just like their buildings. And one of the starfish people would go up with it to keep it operating smoothly. And as it reached higher into the atmosphere, it could change the conductivity of the outer hull and create a magnetic field
mm-hmm.
that would allow them to get higher into the atmosphere until they reached outer space. They could alter the magnetic field in ways that allow the ship to maneuver around the planet.
Mm-hmm.
This was made more possible because the planet's magnetic field was incredibly strong,
mm-hmm.
Hundreds of times stronger than what we would imagine here on Earth. And those ships, once they reached a certain orbit, had docking rings, is the only way I could call it, but they resembled more like huge lips that. And they had these long leaf-like structures that reached out from them,
mm-hmm.
and they extended out like a mile or so. And whenever another ship came in with range, the leaves from each one could wrap around the other and draw them in towards each other. And it would be like a series of giant balloons floating above the atmosphere of the planet, and they could link when these leaves would slowly curl in together and intertwine and bring the two docking ports together. And they would, you know, like any docking port, it would be like lips that would curl around each other and create a seal.
Mm-hmm.
And those ships could combine together as many as they need. And they were like vast fleets. And in places they could block the sun out. But they were semi-translucent, so some of the light passed through them. the interior of the ships were similar to their cities. They were like a balloon within a balloon within a balloon, but on such a scale that each individual balloon surface, inner and outer, could be a living space. And they could alter the shape of the interior balloons according to what they used them for. In the core of the balloon was the central hub where everyone would communicate, where the main starfish pilot, I guess you could call it, would be operating the balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And this extended, these vast structures helped them create an extended living space for their world. I also went into their biology a little bit. Like I said, they had each starfish limb had a brain that allowed them to process information. There was one central brain in the middle, but the central brain was like private. It was the inner sanctum of their consciousness. The outer brains communicated with the others by intertwining their little, nerve tissue extending things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, my language skills this early in the morning ain't that great. And intertwine them. In the early days, they would use this specifically for communicating with other starfish people, and also described how they collected minerals. They would the cities were in earlier times would be under attack by predators.
Mm-hmm.
They could release their young actually into the water. And their young had a kind of a stinger that could defend the city, and they were like the size of plankton, but there were billions of them, and they would flood the area where they were being, the city was being assaulted, actually trying to eat the city, as well as the starfish people, and it would flood around the predators and sting them. Some of the predators just killed, and other predators annoyed, I guess, made uncomfortable. But those particular predators, the young could attach themselves to it, and eventually they would start to grow and extend their nerve endings into the nervous system of the predator.
Mm-hmm.
The predator was supposedly a creature that was similar to what we would call an angler fish. You know, the ones that have those long things that stick out in front of them and glow. It didn't have one of those, but it had a huge jaw with these giant, sharp razor teeth, which was required because the city itself, as it grew, became harder and tougher. And so generally they only ate around the edges, and whatever starfish people were out and about outside the city, outside what we would consider a wall.
Okay.
And they would use, once they became attached to these creatures, they became like, not domesticated, like domesticated, but also like a vehicle which they could move through the oceans in a more rapid form.
Mm-hmm.
And they use these animals to dive down into what would be considered sea canyons, where most of the organic rain from the ocean and minerals and sand and stuff like that, and this thing would digest most of the, we go down and scoop up most of the animals, life forms, you know, plankton and stuff that had fallen down to the bottom, and they'd bring it up to the city, and they would disgorge this mineral into what you would consider a giant pond.
Mm-hmm.
All around the edges of the city were these giant shallow ponds which were used to develop their young, and that's where they came from when they were defending the city. They would release these two, but in this situation, the creature would go into these giant ponds directed by the starfish person that's attached to it, and disgorge all the minerals and whatever plankton that the creature did not digest. There's no polite way of saying it. When you say disgorge, you can imagine what I mean. And these, like I described earlier, were huge. They were nearly as big as the city that they surrounded. They created their defensive zone. The young were actually what they used to defend their city with. Under normal circumstances, when they were not under attack, they would, when the season and time was right, they would flood these into the ocean and release their young to develop further in the vast, warm oceans that surrounded the world. And like I said before, the chemical released from the cities themselves would draw them back. In other cases, they would actually go out and collect the young. They would do this by taking these giant predators and swim slowly through the ocean, and the young would attach themselves to this predator in order to feed. Under normal circumstances, the predator would be drawing them to eat them. But since this creature was under control by a single starfish that was attached to it and integrated into its nerve endings, it was like a giant school bus, I guess, that collected them. Originally, they had seized it, but they were a more primitive society where they still experienced a kind of war, where the main information, the main reason for war was information, and they would capture the other starfish that were from a different part of the world. But generally, this did not work well because the central brain was the controlled all the information, but they had a brutal way of extracting the information by you know what drawing and quartering is?
Right.
Well, under normal circumstances, they could not get any information from the creature, so they attached their own limbs and drew them apart very slowly. This created a situation where the central brain was starting to die, and the instinct creature was to release the information into its various limbs, starfish limbs, and they would, as this process was going on, it would destroy the central brain, but the individual limbs would become like, they could detach them and be, still be alive. They could still feed, but they would not have a central organized brain. It would be like a child who was in a deep sleep, and the information that comes out of the central brain as it died would bring it awake and make it more conscious. But since it no longer had the social guidance of the main brain, it would be integrated into the new tribe, I guess, or society. But that was only done in the what I would call the old days, and the society was still at war with itself. A noise there. I further described how they could see. The starfish people had not eyes, but light-sensitive areas on their skin that originally were designed just to sense the light coming from the two stars. And but they eventually became more sophisticated until they were almost like eyes. But they were covered on the entire surface of their body. They could focus their attention in any direction, up, down, any direction they wanted to, and this allowed them to be protected from, to see where predators were coming from, and be protected when they were out in this vast ocean so they could see.
Mm-hmm.
They did not normally stay on the bottom of the ocean. They were floating entities. Unlike starfish, they could move like starfish at about that same rate, but they did it mostly on the surface of the ocean.
Okay.
So they were like floating entities, but they could go down, lower down, but they did not do this very often because of the dangers of the predators and such. So it was one of their abilities. Their dry cities, the minerals that they could not use in the lower cities were pumped up there, up to the higher cities, in these like a slurry, and the things like sand and base minerals that were left over in from originally would be used in their what we would consider industrial use. But like I said, all their in industry was really organically based. But they had learned to create a lens, and this lens was used to focus the ultraviolet light from their star until it became like a laser. This was also done on a vast scale. And this laser could be used for industrial purposes, like creating the chips that they used in their church/banks of knowledge, the green domes with the intertwining leaves. Oh, I'm getting off subject. And they would be able to focus this and create a tool that, like we would create a machine to create light for creating chips.
Mm-hmm.
But they did not need to make a highly refined light. They had not yet come to the point where we are with using very exotic rays to create chips. They were still creating very large chips, but they were billions of them linked together, like I described earlier. But these chips would be inserted The chips would be inserted into the engineered portions of these arches that had the green. And they were. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. There would be rows of them inserted into the living organism. They created the core of the strength of the arch. So the chips were actually part of the structure of the arch and the chips themselves, encased in a living shell that generated its own energy through the leaves. The basis of their energy was a combination of two different chemicals that they generated, the plants in their world generated in order to sustain themselves. Like photosynthesis, it was distilled into two separate chemicals. When mixed, as different rates could create an energy source for the living organisms and the plants of their world when the sun was not shining. The world at various times would fall into darkness because of a vast, I guess you would say, clouds and fog, but it hung around the world and created almost a semi-transparent darkness that the plants had more trouble operating in. So they used these two different chemicals to generate energy to keep the plant alive. But the starfish people would harvest these chemicals One part of the plant at one end would create the one chemical, and the other part of the plant on the other end would create the other. And they had what you would call veins, I guess, that they intertwined like blood vessels and arteries and vessels. They were totally separate, except when they come together to create at the various individual cells of the plant slash animal, the distinction between the two is lost on them. And that would be a energy source for the plant when it was not experiencing having photosynthesis. But this was how they generated their energy for their society. You know, like we would use oil. This would be their foundation for their society. And I'm jumping subjects again. These are lasers they use to create these steps can also be redirected as a way to melt material. As I said, the planet was mostly made of metal. They only got secondary minerals from earlier bombardment on the planet, and that's how life was established. Originally, the planet itself was the core of a gas giant, and in the early days of their planet, the stars were more active, and as the giant, got closer to the world, before it established a stable orbit, the suns were very unstable in the early days of their evolution and became, they stripped the surface of they stripped the gases off the gas giant until all that was left was the core, which was basically just the big molten metal ball. But later in the evolution of solar system, their solar system, they had a huge bombardment, you know, similar to the one that we experienced when in our Earth's evolution. Mm-hmm. And that's how they got all the minerals and things that could produce life and all the original organics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the planet, like I said, was a slow cooling giant ball of various metals. And these calderas were formed when the planet actually was in its eruptive stage. And they were vast and all about the planet. The planet itself was slightly smaller than Earth, but with a much heavier gravity. And that's why they... I'm getting a little blockage here in my brain. I haven't drunk all my coffee this morning. Let's see now. Some other subject. Oh, yes. Their biology. They fed on mostly the plankton, and along the base in the part that was mostly underwater were like thousands of little mouths, similar in nature that we would see on a starfish.
Mm-hmm.
How they would draw things into them and digest them, but on a smaller scale. Each limb had its own, I guess you would call it a stomach, and the entire process was taken up in these limbs for digestion and the resource, the energy that it got extracted from the ocean would then go into the body. There was no digestive tract. All that was taken care of in these thousands of little extensions that go along the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Hang out like a jellyfish, except not quite so long. Yeah, tentacles. And let's see, where was I at? Okay. Do you have any questions so I can...
Not so far right now.
Okay. Let me see now. Let's jump a subject. I was going to discuss how they exchange information as a currency. It pretty much operated in the same way we use money. But these chips, that they could exchange them and use them as a form of currency.
Okay.
But originally, they only used themselves as that currency. Each sub-brain could store information that huge amounts, social, economical, economics, the whole, any information that our society would use to function could be stored in their sub-brains. But they were less rigid and less structured information. That's the point. That's why they developed the chips. The chips were like hard currency. And that information had to be physically carried from one place to another. After the planet stopped warring with itself, the cities became like city-states, no countries. Each individual was separate, an independent being that was not tied directly or indirectly to any individual or society, but very individualistic. They only learned to cooperate later in their evolution. But originally they were all entities that function on themselves, by themselves, and only later learned to become a civilization. It was like you would compare it to like the early tribal period when we roamed across the savanna in very small tribes and such. And you could compare it to actually the evolution of the human race on the savanna, but theirs was like the evolution on a giant shallow ocean. And only over a long period of time did they learn to cooperate as groups, and that's when they developed their true civilization. The reason they started developing these groups because the predators were vast and many, actually similar to the way life was on the savanna. The humans stuck together because they were prey. It was only later that they learned to become the predators of their world, just like we evolved into a from prey to predators. And the shifting of their diets and the way they function allows them to develop their civilization once they begin to cooperate with each other instead of being individual tribes that or even individuals that wander the ocean separately. It allows them to exchange information. In the old days, they would sometimes, just like our tribes, cooperate to exchange information. Other times, they would just wipe each other out, like humans do. Use the same economy to create the early parts of their society. I'm starting to get a little mental blockage here. I'm having trouble focusing right now. I haven't had all my coffee. I haven't had my coffee yet this morning.
No worries.
I think I need a little input from you. Any questions or any points you want me to clarify?
I just have a question. Like, they created the chips to store data, and
yes.
then they're going to transfer the data to wires to the chips, right? And then later...
They did not use wires. The chips were stacked on each other and fused together to create these arches. And each section of the arch had
mm-hmm.
the leaves come out of it that powered that section of the arch. And where the plants come, where each section of the chips, each section of the living chips
mm-hmm.
Come together, they had the nerve fibers also connected together. They were like cells in a body, but each one had its own energy source.
All right, and what are the chips made of?
They're from the minerals of the which they dredged up from the bottom of the ocean as part of the process of creating more like plank dredging plankton out of the ocean. They would these creatures that they had under their controls. They would dive down to the bottom of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
and like a giant shovel mouth, scoop up in these giant trenches the minerals and the, all the animals that settled down into the ocean to mix together,
mm-hmm.
and then they would bring that up to the cities, and the organics this, they would pour in, they would put into the giant ponds to feed their young and their city. These ponds serve a dual purpose of creating a source of energy for the city itself, you know, because it was a living city, and a source of energy for their young. But in the process of dredging up this material from the depths of their ocean, the leftover would be the various minerals of their world and metals, the ones that weren't fused to the actual surface. And those are the minerals that which they would use to generate these chips. And they would have to pump these minerals up into the what they would call dry cities to create in like a slurry, you know, like how we would do it with we were pumping a slurry out of one area to another for manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
They did the same thing with this minerals that were left over. They were in a fine granular form, and they would pump them up through these living tubes into the dry cities where they had these lenses that would focus the light of their world. Their world also, the sunlight of their world had a much higher percentage of ultraviolet and X-ray, and they used this to power some of the cities by increasing the photosynthesis, and they, when they focused it into a beam, similar to how we do our chips, they could create these chips from the minerals of their world. They would chemically fuse the each layer of the mineral onto
mm-hmm.
the surface and use the through chemical processes that they mix to generate a reaction on the actual surface. And then they would create the transistor, what we would call it, transistors. It's the same way we would create a chip. And then when one layer was done, they'd chemically wash the next layer of minerals over it, depending on what that part of that layer was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid I don't know the exact technical nature of how they make chips, but that's the best I can do. Yes, please. Yes. And these beams would come down and generate their chips, but they were, like I said, they were more along the line of the early chips that we create, humans created. But they made them in such a vast scale that it compensated for their lack of refinement. Their process hadn't gotten to the point where we have with our chips, but they didn't need it to get that much because the tremendous processing power of their own limbs combined with the processing, the memories of the chips allowed them to do things that we can't even imagine yet. The processing power, when they combined all these chips together into these huge column structures, would far outweigh the need for them to be larger. And a lot of the size of the chips were related to maintaining their structural integrity. That was related to the fact that they used them in cases where these chips were kept separate. This is where they used it, and it's a form of currency in exchange for services and minerals and, you know, the social economical things that we would consider. They did the same thing, but in their own society. And these chips were made those individual currencies. Their church / banks is when they were deposited, which pretty much locked them into form, into the shape of the arches. And they were in the arch shape because they needed to have the energy to operate, I guess it would be like one giant computer. Oh, and I'm not sure if I was clear, but at the base of each column, there was a way for each starfish person to insert their own nerve tentacle endings into the base. And there were like three or four points where they could be connected together. Mm-hmm. And at the end of each base, there was another one. At certain times, at certain needs, when the society was needed solutions to problems, they could fill the inside of the dome with their own people and connect to these bases. And it would be a combination of the organic, their own minds, in combination with the chips that allow them to solve all these the problems of their society. That's how they developed their space travel.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they learned to engineer buildings and cities, what they called dry cities. They were still wet to us, but for them it was considered a dry city that was at the top of these mountains. Well, the engineering, the construction, all the information you would need to do that was thought of in these giant living computers. And like I said, in times of real need, every port at the base of every column could be connected to a starfish person. And the intervening space between them could be bridged by other starfish people that were connected in like a giant grid on the bottom of these mini arch roofs that were actually the living computer. So there were thousands of them inside the building connected together, and then hundreds of them connected to the columns. And the exchange of information through the columns and through each individual living being allowed them to solve these vast problems of their society.
Mm-hmm.
And since it was a form of currency, maintained the structure of their society with their currency. You know how the way money works. Any more information about the chips?
No, I've got it.
Any other points I kind of washed over that you could think of?
Sorry?
Any other points that I kind of washed over that you can think of?
No. I got it right now. And I just have a question. Like, do you have any title for the book?
I was working the starfish people, or my journey to another world, or something along that line. But I have nothing really defined.
All right, so you have two ideas, like the starfish people and my journey to another world.
Yeah, a journey, somehow incorporate a journey into another world. I was thinking like an image of a shadow image of a man, and then in the foreground, and then the image of the city or another starfish person in the background. The basis of this was the communication between one human in our world and one starfish person in their world. Another part of the idea was to compare the similarities and the differences between their world and ours. Like, they could not understand the idea of roads in our world, how we had vehicles moving at breakneck speeds, feet next to another one moving in the exact opposite direction. And the pedestrian, way the pedestrians moved around was right next to that. It's like, you know, you're set it up for trouble. Collisions, you know. They couldn't understand why we would do something that obvious that could be so destructive to their cities and civilizations.
Mm-hmm.
See, along that line, and then, you know, we would compare how we would interact with each other and interact with them on the social level. How we establish the individual in our society and the group as they establish their individual in their society and their group,
mm-hmm.
and how each one evolves separately and differently. In that way, we can compare the structure of our society and its limitations and weaknesses, you know, like religion and politics, and see how they compare to each other and how one would think what this was odd in one and how the other would think this was odd in the other. You got my general drift there? So, my general idea?
Uh-huh, got it.
So it's a social economic analysis in comparison of the two societies and how they were basically different or similar.
All right, so you haven't the book title yet, right?
I really haven't defined a book title at the moment, but...
No worries.
I just haven't thought of anything decent. That those ideas I said earlier were about the best I could do. Mm-hmm. I'm more descriptive than I am title. I think that requires different kind of thinking on my part. But I think the social and differences between the two societies should be intermingled between each section in comparison, be compared between the two, how one did society did in each individual section that we described. There would be an exchange from one side, how they did it, and the weaknesses and strengths and the faults in their society in comparison to the other society. I'm leaning to the point where the starfish people are of a superior system because of the structure, just the sheer structure of the society, and, you know, things like environmental contamination, how they did not understand how we could destroy our own environment through our own technology and things like that. Like poisoning of the environment and how they could, this was like, you know, killing themselves, which was unheard of in their world. Their lifespans were extensive. They did have an end of life. Once they reached an extreme old age, I don't have a sense of time here, but at one point the brain, the central brain, would start to break down. Mm-hmm. And this is the point where each individual brain, this was a secondary form of reproduction. As the brain, central brain broke down, it gave up all its personal information to each subbrain.
Mm-hmm.
And each subbrain was like a sleeping child. But as it received the personality and the personal information of that person, of that creature, they would start to gain a sense of self and awareness. And it was going to describe how their mind slowly developed into what we would consider an I think, therefore I am state. But all through the life of these creatures, these brains were more a form of information storage until the central brain started to die. Then the personality of that person would be flow into each individual brain. So it would be an extension of that person's awareness, personality, and type into those subbrains.
Mm-hmm.
Not an exact copy of each person, because each brain had a tendency to focus on certain forms of information.
Mm-hmm.
But once the consciousness itself was actually flowed into the each individual brain, they would start to become aware of being a separate individual. But when the brain, central brain died, the core would separate from the limbs, and each individual section would be like a sleeping child. This was how, in the old days, when they wanted to indoctrinate someone into their society, to another tribe's society, they would actually physically, slowly rip them apart. I know, it sounds very brutal, but that was in the time of their wars, when they did not cooperate with each tribes. But in the natural process, this would occur in the normal process of life. So it would be like the soul of the individual was being transferred into these other life forms. This was a secondary form of reproduction that actually created a being that was emotionally and mentally more developed than the ones that grew directly in the ocean. The closest thing I can compare it to is like a class system, but what not with a sense of superiority, just a different class of the starfish people.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the ones that initially became the engineers, the social structures of the society flowed from them. You know, like their, I guess, like our religion or our economic structures.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that created that structure in the society. I'm trying to make a comparison between the vast people that in our society that perform simpler functions
mm-hmm.
to the ones that perform more complex functions. Without these social, economic differences,
mm-hmm.
they were considered vital and equally important parts of society, unlike ours, where the masses are the arcs. This is another comparison point between the two different worlds, where we exploit our employees by taking a portion of their income, their what's the word? You know how an individual works for someone else, but they're not getting the full benefit of their own labor. A large portion of it is going to the company or individual which they work for.
Mm-hmm.
But in their society, it was more. There was no sense of better or inferior, just a different function. And this is another point of comparison between our society and theirs.
Mm-hmm.
We would have what I would call a wage. We have wage slaves where people do work, but they don't get the full value of the work.
Exactly.
The best comparison would be like in slaves, you know, they just got their meals and taken care of and abused. And all the resources that they generated went to the upper class, but that's the point of difference between ours and theirs. That's another point of difference. And I try to make those comparisons, want to spread those out throughout the book, but I haven't really defined all of those.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be an easy way to compare them. I mean, to see the difference between the two.
Got it. And what's going to be the name for the author?
Oh, my name? Oh, well, I don't want to use my name.
You don't
I mean,
want to use your name?
I don't want to be famous. I don't want people to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you have to name, pet name,
a synonym, I guess.
A book name?
Yeah, some kind of book name. But I would want it somehow relatable to me and the book. I really, like I said, I really have nothing defined in my mind about it. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I've been writing down things in your program, but
mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm doing it quite right. I don't know if you've received it. Do I need to do something different to send it?
Did you mention messages from your side?
Yeah, did you get those messages? I think I'm putting them in the wrong section.
Just one moment. Yeah, we got two messages from your side. Three of them.
Long, drawn-out paragraphs and sentences that all run together.
If you're having trouble using the portal, you can use the email. You can also do an email.
Well, it's just a matter of me not understanding how it works. When it comes to tactical programs and such like that, for economics and, you know, the way things work like that, I'm very weak at those points mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So I have trouble understanding it. I just want to make sure that what I did write down was getting through to you.
If you're having trouble, you can just simply do us an email. I have also the Sheldon has also sent you an email at your email address, and he's also shared forms over there.
Yeah, that's the one I actually opened up, and then it says welcome, and then in the exchange of it, he said, yes, I understand. And then after that, I put in more information
mm-hmm.
About the various things that came to mind. Similar to what I'm saying now, but some of them are a little different. Did you get any of that information?
We only got a certain three messages from your side. That's all we have on our portal. We haven't got any or anything else.
Now, when I open that program, does that create a connection to you? Or do I have to initiate a connection says welcome early?
We have already sent you an invitation. You have already signed up in our portal. Once you log in, you can see there's a row which says list, board, table, dashboard, files. There's a long row, and in the end you see more, and when you click more, there's going to be a new there's going to be a drop down box that pops up, and then you can select your messages, and from there you can just send this message.
Well, and that is where I was putting them. After he said yes, I understand, and I just started using the columns underneath it to put more of the material in it. So as long as you're getting that information, let me turn on my computer.
All right. And do you have any manuscript or anything written down?
No, I'm afraid. afraid not. This is pretty much off the top of my head.
All right, it's all in your head. And are you still, like, thinking, or the story has ended up?
As I think about it, the information evolves into more complex structures, like the chips that, like how I described the chips, I only had a vague outline established, and then as I speak about it, I remember and refer to things new, and they're sometimes connected together and sometimes not. You're going to have to separate the parts that are related to each other and put the other parts that aren't related into separate categories. But that is a weak point on my part where my brain cannot do that. It's difficult for me to separate them.
What's going to be the genre of your book? I believe it's going to be fiction.
Please say that again.
What's going to be the genre of your book?
Genre. Well, that is you mean like if it's science fiction or metaphysical or social, economical, something like that?
Come again, please.
When you say genre, could you define that for me so I understand what you're saying?
Like,
I'm
what's
not quite
the
sure.
Category? Like, what's the category of the book? It's going to be a fictional, or
Well, yeah, that's what I wanted. Would like, I haven't really defined. It has elements of metaphysics and social and science mixed into it, but I'm not sure about the clear something to clearly define what the book is. I'm leaning towards metaphysical, but I haven't gotten from the technical into the spiritual aspects of the different societies. I just touched on how they a soul, and for them it would be the development of each limb into a new consciousness that was like an extension of the old consciousness. I was going to compare that to our society of children being taught and educated in the form that we were taught and educated, the same structure, social structure between the two. But I haven't gotten deep into that into my mind because those are not subjects which I know a lot about.
All right, and what's going to be the page count? Do you have any idea?
I'm sorry, I have no idea. It's like a river flowing out of my brain. I can't define it that clearly.
No worries, I got it.
Like a dam bursting, and it all comes out when it's ready.
All right, and is there any time frame? Like, when do you want the book to be completed?
I have. This is not outside of my expertise. I think that would have to get some input from you folks, because I don't have a time frame in my mind.
No time frame. All right. So, yeah, I've got all the information over here. I'm going to share it with the team. And once the information has been shared with them, they're going to start working on it. And then I'm going to get back to you in the next at least 7 to 10 business days with the initial draft.
All right. And it would be helpful if I had questions or input that would help define each individual section more. If you have questions how something that you think is not covered clearly or sufficiently, to ask me about that, and I could define it.
Once I share all this information with the team, and then I'm going to get back to you with the draft and with more questions related each topic. Okay?
Okay, that sounds good.
And are you planning to put any photos or any graphics in your book?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Are you planning to include any photos or any graphics in your book?
Yes, I would like it to be very visual. Lots of images, descriptions of the world and their nature.
So images or anything, anything with you?
Oh, I have no physical images, nothing drawn or made, because I'm not that great of an artist. I can give you descriptive images of them.
Yeah. You can just send any images, any references. That's going to help us.
Yeah, that's another point that would be very helpful if you would help me define that. I can give in the questions, like if you need an image about how something would look or how what this part of the city would look like, if you could ask me those questions of what you want to know, then I can define it more clearly in my head and give you a descriptive image of what it is.
Sure.
Am I clear?
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
What's going to be the target audience for your book?
Well, you know, I have no idea. That I think, is something that you need to discuss. Because I'm trying to include aspects of metaphysics and social engineering and visual images of the world and how their sciences work compared to our sciences. I do want to create an element of the person who is receiving this information is evolving into a more complete person who accepts his nature and becomes more like he would like to be. I am this, and I know I am. I know I'm learning my true nature. And so like a spiritual evolution that is triggered by this being contacting him. That's the best way I can describe it.
Got it. And who do you plan on selling your book to? Close friends, colleagues, family, or the general market?
I would think the general market, but I have no expertise in that area. I have no idea.
We're going to help you with that, no worries. And, like, what's the purpose of the book? Like, you want to sell it or to earn from the book, or it's just for, it's for the general purpose?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I would like to earn a few bucks off of it, but I would also like to inject get people the idea about cooperating and the structures of this that would allow for one to evolve into a higher being.
All right. And is there any
aware of the
style
and the true
that you
nature.
Prefer?
Say that again, please.
Is there any particular writing style that you prefer?
I really have nothing to base that on. I like the sci-fi genres and the metaphysical genres. I study a great deal about both of those, and would like to. And those are the ones I read most about. I was a very big metaphysical reader. You know, all the spiritual books and all the things about how human nature can evolve into a higher being. And then my hobbies were like, I like to learn about science and technology and how they relate, that sort of thing. Those are the two subjects that I'm most familiar with.
All right. And is there any lead characters, lead profiles?
I don't know what that is.
I'm asking, in your story, is there any lead character?
Oh, lead character, yes. The two entities that the human and then
the
Stark person who contacted them.
Mm-hmm.
I would like a little interpersonal exchange, but I haven't really worked on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how would you, excuse me, in the way that you would develop a friendship with someone, or a colleague, the exchange of information,
mm-hmm.
The likes and dislikes of the individuals, how they can become closer and more connected. And the starfish person uses this information to create a stronger connection to the person. And, of course, humans use the connection to become a better person.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So it's like a personal evolution of the person to become more whole and more connected. For the starfish person would be on the connectedness to the society.
Got it, sir.
And the isolation of our society from individuals,
mm-hmm.
being more connected into the society, the human part would be originally like a loner or someone who did not interact with someone but wondered about things and was felt odd, or like someone who was like a freak because he thought he was self that way because of his experiences of his own life. Like, you know, he'd have dreams that were like little snapshots, I'm losing my voice, snapshots of his life, and it would be like foggy mental state. An example would be dreams of walking into his living room and seeing the George Foreman fight, you know, the famous boxer, and that he won the battle, the fight with this actually happened in history, and that he said, "I dreamed this." And the mom would say, "Oh, no, this is just a recording." But my dad says, pops out and says, "Oh, no, this is happening right now." And, of course, I said who was going to win,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. An experience would be like he had a dream of going with his mother as a young child to a medical facility, like multi-story doctor's office, speaking
mm-hmm.
with the doctor, but as he walks into the building,
mm-hmm.
he sees this collage of art, you know, it's like a painting that's three-dimensional, you know. And then he turns and sees the doctor, and the painting or collage had not been built when he dreamed it. He dreamed about it, and he had never seen the doctor. He had never been diagnosed with his problems,
mm-hmm.
and the building had not even been built yet. So, and then there are the times where he would hear people thinking different thoughts, but he would think they were actually saying it, but they were actually just thinking it, and how this would create confusion in him, a sense of denial of his true nature. Yeah. What time was that? Okay.
Hello? So your voice is breaking up.
Pin down a little bit more for you.
I'm sorry?
Is there anything else I can pin down or define more for you?
Yeah, if you have more, you can just go ahead. No worries.
Well, actually, it helps a great deal when you ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
It brings up points that I thought about, but haven't written down or defined more clearly.
Sure. So, sir, initially I got enough information from your end. So now I'm going to share it with the team.
Very good.
And I will get back to you in the next 7 to 10 business days with the initial draft and with the questions so we can proceed more, okay?
Thank you. That's very, very helpful. I hope we get something that helps people and maybe even earns a little money.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, then.
I'll talk to you soon.
Time, Mr. Early. It was nice talking to you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.